everybody. Welcome to Digital Hammurabi. I am Megan Lewis. For those of you who are new to the show, I run the channel with my husband, Dr. Joshua Bowen. And today we are very excited to be joined by Dr. Erin Thompson, who is an actual art crime professor, which I didn't actually know was a job until a couple of weeks ago. So this is going to be very exciting. Dr. Thompson works at College University of New York, has recently published a book called Possession, The Curious History of Private Collectors. There is a link in the description if this interview interests you and you'd like to find out more about Dr. Thompson and her work. And her most notable claim to fame is that she has recently been denounced by Tucker Carlson, or Carlson Tucker. I get his names the wrong way around. But she's officially denounced, so you know we're in good, wonderful company here. Dr. Thompson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Would you mind just opening by telling us a little bit about yourself, how you got into the field of art crime, which, again, just sounds absolutely fantastic?
Well, I made a lot of decisions that make sense only in retrospect. So from the slogging through them point of view, I was getting my PhD in art history, and I thought, I'm never going to get a job as an art historian.
Many of us do.
I decided to go to law school, which I did. So I finished my dissertation, my PhD and my JD at the same time. And then I worked as a lawyer for a couple of years. And then this position came up. So I teach at John Jay College at CUNY, and they were looking for someone with a PhD in art history and a JD to teach art crime. And I was like,
I'm like the only person in the world with those qualifications.
So academia is actually my alt-ac career, I guess, in background. But I had been writing about art crime issues while a lawyer, because I was very interested in forgeries. So I was writing my dissertation on ancient Greek vases, and there was a group of them that were so strange in their imagery that prior scholars had said, oh, these just must be fakes, because essentially they were making a lot of poop jokes. And scholars were like, that's not the
good. Ancient Greeks were far too cultured and civilized for poop jokes. Yeah.
So I started to think about, well, how can you actually tell when something is genuine or not for an antiquity? And I realized that all of the assumptions that I had about that if it's in a museum, it must be genuine, are not really supported, that there is far less reliability for scientific testing, far less scientific testing actually takes place. And the only way I think that you can definitely know something is authentic is if it comes from scientific excavation. And so I got very interested in, well, how do pieces end up in collections if not through excavation? And, you know, I started delving into the seamy world of art looting and smuggling and theft and forgery, and really have not emerged since. So.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for that. And something that I recently found out, along the same lines of your understanding that objects in museums aren't necessarily authentic, is the, and we'll talk about this in a couple of minutes, the fact that you have the same issue with auction houses, which I spoke to Dr. Patty Gerstenbluth a couple of weeks ago, and I was honestly shocked to find out that actually due diligence a lot of times is not done by people that you would expect to do that kind of work, to actually verify that what they have is both authentic and legally in their possession. So yeah, it's a very interesting world. So two of the terms that often come up when we're talking about antiquities and artifacts are provenance and provenience. And I don't think I've ever sat down and really asked someone to explain the difference between those two. So would you mind just going through the distinction for us?
Sure. So it's a simple answer with a whole lot riding on it, depending on who you ask. So they both, confusingly enough, come from the same French word, provenir, where something comes from. So provenance is what we use to mean the ownership history of a thing. Provenience is more a narrow piece of that, where it was found. So find spot versus what has happened between antiquity and the present. So you can think of provenience as what usually goes up on the label on a museum case. Mm-hmm. You know, ancient Sicily.
Excavated Assyria or something similar. Yes,
as if there was, the object was made in antiquity, used in antiquity, deposited in a grave or fell into a trash heap or whatever, and then boom, magically appears in a plexiglass box in a museum 2000 later, 2,000 years later, nothing matters.
Definitely how it happens.
Yeah, exactly. So provenance is, well, who owned it in between? So obviously with an archaeological object, that can be impossible to trace. It's only rare cases where we know exactly where something came from. And also a lot of false information gets put into there. I mean, I don't mean lies, but, you know, someone will say, well, I think it came from this or that, and mm-hmm. then that all gets bundled together. So in the past, people cared about provenance for authenticity reasons. Was this something that actually was made in antiquity and we can sort of trace how it came to us, or does it just appear out of nowhere and therefore it might be more likely to be a fake? Mm-hmm. Today, people are also interested in ownership history for making sure that something was not looted and smuggled out of its country of origin. To me, they go together, mm-hmm. But sometimes people only care about one or the other. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Thank you. So when we're looking specifically at antiquities available for purchase, why is it that provenance and provenience is such important questions and important pieces of information?
Well, there are definitely different answers to this question depending on what you care about. So I came into thinking about this from a very archaeological point of view, you know, what thinking about, I want to only look at genuine antiquities in order to understand the truth of the past instead of something that somebody might have made up. And I want to make sure archaeological sites are not looted in order to produce objects to be sold in the marketplace, because looting a site destroys the archaeological value of that site. You might think that, oh, well, a vase is buried in a tomb and then it's taken from the tomb and put on the market. Who cares what information is lost? But you lose a huge amount of things. For example, from the deposits on the inside of vases, we can know what they once held. We can trace ecological histories of the region. What did they grow? What did they live on? What were they trading? And better understand the patterns of ecological change that we can use to fight climate change today, to get on one of my hobby horses. But there have been decades of archaeologists telling people, don't buy things without a good ownership history, because you'll mess up my archaeological site mm-hmm. data. And people have been like, so what? It's pretty. I like it. So what I've been doing lately is thinking about, well, what are some other reasons to care about provenance that might resonate better with buyers? Mm-hmm. And this is what I tried to do for my book, Possession, was think about what do private collectors, so individual buyers of antiquity, what are they wanting from those purchases? So I can try and adjust the message to those desires. So I've been talking a lot lately about fakes, because mm-hmm. people might think, you know, people do think of all sorts of reasons why it's not that bad to buy an object that was looted and smuggled out of a country of origin, but nobody wants to be the person that other people are like, ha ha, did you see that ridiculous fake that they're mm-hmm. displaying as ancient Roman on their bookcase or something like that. And so I think about fakes, and I also talk a lot about tax. I know, super sexy topic of discussion.
But I imagine very compelling for a certain class of collector.
Because if you're spending a ton, one of the reasons people like to buy antiquities is that they're a great investment, because the market for them is pretty steady. But even if you can't resell it, you know, somebody, you know, the fashion for this type of antiquity falls or something. For decades, people in the US have thought, well, no problem, I can just donate it to a museum and then get the tax deduction based on the full value of that donation. So in recent years, American museums have been making it harder and harder to donate objects. They won't accept objects without a provenance, without knowing where the object has been since at least 1970. In most cases, plenty of loopholes still, but working on it. And so I'm trying to tell buyers, like, look, this is an investment decision, that you don't want to buy something with bad provenance, because you might not be able to recoup the value of your investment later. Plus, evidence of looting might emerge, and then you'd have to surrender it, and you'd lose all of your money right there. So it seems
regardless,
like, why risk your money that way?
Excellent. Do you feel like people have been receptive to this kind of more financially based message?
I hope so. You know, I haven't had somebody come to me and say it.
No one's come and said, because of you, I decided not to buy this very shady looking artifact.
But I have had a lot of people say, oh, I didn't think of that before.
Well, that's good.
What I really want to do is persuade tax authorities to value at zero an unprovenanced antiquity.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Because of the fact that it might not have, the owner might not have good title, and you can't donate something you stole to a museum. Or I'm not saying that owners of antiquities stole them, but you can't donate
someone
stolen that you don't have a good title to. So if some country can come up and say, oh, here's evidence
That would be awesome. So the title of the video mentions eBay, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. But like I mentioned, this isn't just a problem for like eBay and for Facebook sales and like the black market of antiquities. Auction houses aren't always as thorough as they should be or as we'd like with regard to establishing a clear chain of ownership, the provenance for objects they're selling. Do stolen or faked objects appear in auction houses very regularly, or is this more of a rare occurrence?
The more you look, the more you see. It's amazing, actually. Just 2 weeks ago, in June this month, Christie's had to remove 5 lots, I think, from an antiquities auction because they were shown to have been looted. And there's one sort of treasure trove of photographic evidence of looting from the Giacomo Medici case. So Italian authorities seized the storehouse of this antiquity smuggler, and he was a criminal mastermind in buying antiquities that were accidentally uncovered by farmers, in hiring looters to dig up tombs, in sometimes directing thefts to order from museums. And then he placed these objects for decades in major collections, major museums. The one thing in which he was not a criminal mastermind is he kept exact records of all of his transactions, which is maybe not the best idea. So authorities have been, over the years, finding these objects when they come up for sale and seizing them. So the big auction houses always complain, you know, just give us the list and we can make sure on our own that the objects that are offered to us are not on the list. And the Italian authorities say, well, if we made the list available, then people would not, these objects
wouldn't come up for sale anyway.
Yes, that's a big debate, which I can see on both sides. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there's in Paris on the 29th of June, there's a sale in which Benin bronze will be sold and a couple of idol statues that were taken from Nigeria during the Biafran War, during the unrest. And people have pointed out, like, well, these are ethically very problematic objects that are just being offered with a sort of, well, no problem, you know, they're so different categories of what people would consider theft or morally problematic come up with different levels of discussion. So Nazi looted art is now something that auction houses are super on top of, examining the provenance, the chain of custody of pieces that might possibly have been taken from Jewish families during World War II. And they do not apply that same level of paranoid scrutiny. Paranoid is the wrong word, but intense scrutiny to the provenance of ancient pieces. So again, in June, an auction house was sued by the Museum of the Bible for concealing the bad provenance of an ancient
tablet.
So there are all sorts of shenanigans happening in the sales world, which, as I tell people, is not surprising because you have to look at the motivation. So if a dealer or an auction house doesn't sell something, they don't make money. So
problematic.
It's just problematic. So they want customers to think of them as a reliable place to buy good art that won't get them into trouble, but they also want to sell art. And to me, as an archaeologist, if you are selling an antiquity that you don't have any indication of where it was before 1991, Christie's just had a sale in June in which a lot of the pieces were like this, it's not worth it. It was probably looted at some point. It's just that you can't prove it. And to me, the seller is sort of guessing that no claimant country will be able to prove it. So it's...
So why not?
Yeah. Not cool, I think, but others disagree.
Thank you. One of my absolute favorite things about your Twitter feed, and if anyone here is on Twitter and is not following Dr. Thompson, please follow her. It's at ArtCrimeProf, is the selection of badly faked antiquities that you find on eBay. The commentaries are absolutely hilarious. And if I can get it to work, I do have an example that I think you shared earlier this week that was just absolutely beautiful. So I have to work out. There we go. There we are. So this delightful looking thing that is apparently a doll's head. I think people would disagree that that is actually a doll's head, but apparently it is. And then this wonderful explanation of why it looks quite as interesting as it does, because it's, well, faked apart from anything else, but it's got a beautiful story about, like, someone, it was a broken foot from something, and then it was carved into a doll's head for a child, and isn't this a wonderful rare piece of antiquity? And then, interestingly, the seller tries to claim that they are a member of the AIA, which is a professional institution for archaeologists in America, and I assume is trying to give a veneer of authenticity to the objects that they are selling. So there are a myriad of reasons why one should not buy objects, ancient objects, or objects purported to be ancient from eBay. Yes, how much fun do you have finding these fakes?
Oh, so much fun. Also, somebody said of that one that head looked like Donald Trump. I post only one a day, but that guy had like these novellas of description of fake provenance that were amazing. So I really had to do that. And also I pointed out to the AIA, like, this is not cool. So they said they're looking into it. It's both very fun to find these and very disheartening because there are so many. I encourage you, just anybody can entertain themselves by searching ancient fill in the blank for sale on eBay, on Etsy, on Google, and see what you get. And there are such ridiculous things. My favorite that I found so far, which is still on sale several years later because it's $15,000, so a little bit of a high, steep asking price, is the site euphemistically calls it an ancient Egyptian body part, but it is a very erect looking penis, mummified, wrapped in, you know, mummy looking cloth, which is what is, you know, I can't tell if things are forgeries just from looking at a photograph, but if that is authentic, either I am misunderstanding fundamental things about mummification or erections or both. But
I think we're all misunderstanding fundamental things about erections if this is a possibility.
But what I'm trying to do by tweeting about this is to maybe give people a little bit of pause of, is this thing authentic or not? Because it seems like that question makes people stop more than, is this thing looted or not? Mm-hmm. And so I try and put in little tips about, well, even if you're not an expert in this sort of thing, here's how you can think about whether or not it's more likely that this thing is genuine or not. One basic one, for example, is looking at the seller's other objects for sale. So one ancient ring for sale, maybe. If the seller has an inventory of like 500 ancient rings.
Possibly a bit suspect.
Which is the thing. I am now really into, there are all these people advertising Roman and or Viking, sometimes Roman Viking, wedding rings. Sort of pretty simple bands or sometimes with like little hands linking, made out of bronze, which is very easy to do in modern. My absolute favorite is one strategy is to say that these have been re-gilded for modern use. So you don't even have to worry about patina.
They don't even have to look old because they've been restored. So they just look prettier. That's amazing.
Yes. Like, okay, somebody needs to, you know, use your put on your critical hat and think about this. I'm also thinking about one of my quarantine projects might be to write a guide to faking antiquities, because I am very worried what's going to happen to archaeological sites during the coronavirus and the economic recession that's really global is that people turn to looting to feed their families in times of economic crisis. And I just want to say, why get the blisters? You know,
you can make them and sell the ones that you make. So how judging by eBay, it's pretty easy to actually fake this stuff. How easy is it to like make your own antiquities?
I mean, judging by the things I've seen, it's very easy to make a bad antiquity.
They don't even have to look it.
It can be a lot easier than you think, and I think people think of, well, there's going to be all these, you know, detective strategies of someone will scientifically test this. But testing only exists for certain categories of materials to authenticate them. And even for something that can be definitely scientifically tested, like say that little terracotta head thingy, it's expensive. So to test that, to determine its age would likely cost more than
the value of the object.
Right. So why would anyone test it? Plus, that one is a good example too. That you could take an ancient bit of pottery sherd and sort of carve a little bit in it to make it look like a sculpture, and then
you've got something very special.
And we can't tell how recently it's been carved.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, people, what we're saying is, for the love of God, don't buy fakes off eBay. Don't buy really any antiquities off eBay, but do take a look and amuse yourselves at the wide variety of fakes that are available. And I think I've said this 8 million times on this show before, but if you do want to buy an antiquity, again, don't do it. But if you really want to, there are very wonderful people who will make replicas. As we see over here, you go on eBay and search for replica cuneiform tablet, and you'll find Dr. Jeremiah Peterson, who is an actual trained sumerologist who will write out pretty much whatever you want to in cuneiform and send it to you. And they are beautiful and ethical, and you're not paying $1,200 for something that someone possibly carved in their back garden.
Because fake cuneiform tablets are so like, mwah. Yeah, well.
I've seen some where just it's very obvious that the person who's made them has no idea what cuneiform actually is, because the signs are upside down and back to front and possibly just made up entirely, and they're a wonder to behold, an absolute wonder to behold. And something that you also pointed out I think last week on Twitter to be suspicious of is if someone is selling these things and it has a very open return. Hang on. Hey, River. Sorry, everyone. My dog is going nuts. River, come here. You're fine. But if someone has a very...
All right, now you have to do it to us. Come on. Oh, then he'll never leave us alone. Yeah, but I've been seeing a lot of online sellers saying 100%, no questions back. No questions asked, money back. Guaranteed if you're at all unsatisfied. We guarantee it's authentic, so send it back to us.
We'll just take it back and give you a new one, because we have, like you said, 500 near identical rings. So we can
There was one very funny listing. Was somebody put it as a testimonial on their online gallery. Someone saying, you know, sending in an email saying, thank you very much for replacing my broken ancient Egyptian figurine. It came broken. And
for a non-broken one.
Anyway, it's like, oh, well, that's a bad sign, actually. They've got a piece of the stock. But yeah, what I was confused by this at first, and then I realized, oh, it's so that their customers don't report them to eBay or whatever sales platform or a credit card processing company is selling fakes, because that's what would happen if they didn't get, will have a refund.
Their replacement.
And that would be disastrous to their business, whereas just having to refund one person's money then lets you continue selling ridiculous fakes in peace.
So I actually wanted to ask, do you have a feel, so having spent so much time looking at these things, do you have a feel for how much is actually being sold? Because some of these things, you look at them and you think, no one is going to buy that. But someone must be. There must be a market for it. Otherwise, people wouldn't be trying to sell them. Is this, do people actually make real money at this? Are they successful?
There seem to be various strategies with this. So some sellers are going for lots of lower volume sales. Some people are doing the sort of classic online sales technique of you only pay the shipping, you know, the price for the thing will be pretty low, but then they'll charge you
20
or something from a country where that is actual money. So you're earning money in euros or dollars in a way that's not open to you usually in that country. And then some people seem to be really gambling on one big sale. So yesterday I was posting about an ancient Rome, supposedly ancient Roman ring, supposedly showing aliens.
Oh God.
Which someone was trying to sell on eBay for 40,000 pounds or something like that. Mm-hmm. So if they sell that one, they're
good for the year.
Yeah.
Thank you. So we're going to talk a little bit about the statue removal activities that have been happening around the world, really. But before we get onto that, we have a couple of questions that I want to ask you because they're pertinent to what we've been discussing. So G.A. Hook says, essentially, is it safe to say that if it is on eBay, it's a fake? Hobby Lobby worked in the black markets and didn't use eBay. Correct? ?
Right. Hobby Lobby seems to have gone straight to the source. I have a lot of feelings about that. I don't think you can say that everything on online sales is a fake because we have seen genuine looted objects for sale there. One, for example, when this ancient Roman site of Apamea in Syria was heavily looted during the conflict there, the Apamea was unique in the, not unique, but Apamea had a mint. So there weren't very many mints in the Roman world that made their own coins. And sort of uniquely, the coins from Apamea didn't seem to have circulated very widely in antiquity. You can find a coin minted in Rome all over the Roman world, but Apamea seems to have been more contained. So in the months after the looting, you could see a huge uptick in the number of coins minted in Apamea for sale online. Mm-hmm. Which might have been clever forgers taking advantage of that, but I think was probably actually the results of looting. Mm-hmm. And we see obvious fakes mixed in with not so obvious things that might be genuine. So it's also a good sort of investment strategy to mix in some fakes with your genuine looted antiquities to kind of increase your profit. So I don't think we can think of online sales as just funny or non-problematic. It really is a way for people to sell maybe the smaller finds that they found while looting. And much more problematically, I think online sales set this expectation that you can sell an unprovenanced antiquity for a bunch of money. And that kind of expectation is what drives people to go out and loot, even if they don't find anything, even if all they succeed in doing is destroying an archaeological site, a tomb, maybe finding a few coins or whatever, not the thing that they wanted to sell. But the market drives looting, whether or not the market is obviously fake or obviously genuine.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say, actually, related to that question, even though Hobby Lobby wasn't using eBay, it was recently reported that their collection of Dead Sea Scrolls are entirely fake. So even if you're going through, I don't want to say proper channels because the way Hobby Lobby acquired much of their material is highly questionable. But even if you are trying not to buy off eBay or buy from a more reputable dealers, you can still very easily end up with objects that are fakes, that are stolen and looted. And this is something that is absolutely fraught with like risks and dangers, and just don't do it. I need a sign for this. Just don't do it.
The Hobby Lobby Dead Sea Scrolls, I mean, it's hilarious because they seem to have been pretty terrible fakes as well, but they were donated to the Museum of the Bible by Hobby Lobby, by the Steve Green family. So it's unknown if he took a tax deduction from that donation, but that if there was a tax deduction there, it could have been in the millions, and it would have been funded by taxpayers. So fakes in museums are problematic because we're all paying for them.
Mm-hmm. I did also want to talk to you about the statues, and I mentioned your denouncement by popular Fox News host, for your comments on Twitter about the removal of historical statues, specifically statues celebrating slavers and members of the US Confederacy. What are you... People obviously find the removal of statues problematic and discuss it in terms of erasing history. And if we just take these things down, then we're essentially pretending that our past was not as problematic as it is. Why do you think that's a problematic argument?
Well, I've been thinking for years about the deliberate destruction of cultural heritage and of art. And it's much more complicated than we assume, because when you preserve something, when you fight to preserve it, like, say, an archaeological site, you also destroy other things. So numerous archaeological sites have been excavated by means of evicting the modern population. Take the Temple of Bel in Palmyra, Syria, which ISIS blew up a couple of years ago. In the early 20th century, an archaeological expedition evicted the entire village, a modern village, which had been sheltering inside the walls of the temple complex, in order to excavate it. Or I've been thinking too a lot lately about archaeological excavations in Palestine and how the ancient past is given priority over modern lives. So these aren't simple decisions about what to preserve and what to destroy. Mm-hmm. And gonna fly. Preservation is expensive too, right? So just leaving a statue or an artwork someplace isn't costless. You have to be devoting money to its upkeep at the expense of the upkeep of something else. So something that people seem to have been shocked by to hear from me in the last couple of weeks is how expensive it is to pay for the maintenance of Confederate monuments. So taxpayers in America pay millions of dollars a year to preserve, maintain, you know, mow the grass at parks celebrating the Confederacy, restore statues, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, incredibly important sites for African American and Native American history are disintegrating through lack of funding. So I don't think that these are simple questions, but they're incredibly fascinating. And I want to think about them in terms of the whole history of destroying statues as well. So fall of communism, lots of statues went down or continuing to go down. I actually found it very funny that the French president Macron a couple of weeks ago said something like, the French Republic does not erase history, does not topple statues. And I'm like, hello, you know, thousands of French revolutionaries are spinning in their graves because that's the first thing they did, was destroy aristocratic art. Think about protests in the Reformation and Counter-Reformation. Think about in America pulling down statues of King George upon the Revolution. This is how we do it. We fight ideas by fighting symbols. And a lot of... We don't forget the history. We forget the violence of the transition of the history, often because new regimes build new statues, new architecture, new symbols to replace the fallen symbols. So it doesn't seem like an aesthetic loss versus when people who have less power attack something. It's called vandalism because they're seen as taking away aesthetic pleasure without replacing it with anything else. Mm-hmm. But it seems like what's been happening around the world in the last few weeks is people banding together to realize, even if we don't know what comes next, removing these symbols that are painful is something we need to either do or talk about in a way that gives hope rather than fruitless committee discussions for decades.
Because these are things that have been discussed for a lot, like as long as I've been in the United States, at least, and far longer than that. So it feels as though this is an ongoing conversation that hasn't actually produced any change. And I think is probably very frustrating to people who are arguing that we can remember the history and remember the past and the painful past without also commemorating the people who are responsible for the enslavement of so many others and for those kinds of atrocities.
I'm actually seeing a question if I thought it would help if government regulation forced companies like Amazon and eBay to be more proactive about fake antiquities. And I want to say, like, eBay is actually very on top of this if you report a listing. So you can just click on report, say that something is a replica. They actually, ask eBay on Twitter replied to me very quickly about this whole AIA fake little head thing and said, well, here's how you do the report, all the steps, and then they will investigate a listing. So I really encourage everybody, because it's hilarious, to look at them and then report them. And this will actually help, I think, the fight against this market that encourages looting in your own way while being able to laugh.
And it's an amusing way to kill 20 minutes. Why not? Well, so I am actually out of questions. Is there anything in particular you wanted to discuss or bring up while we're here?
See. Just to continue what I was saying, I mean, art crime is something that I get to make up every day, what I study. And there aren't a lot of people who do it. So I really encourage, you know, amateur detectiveness, side gigging, getting really into it as a hobby. Like, there's a lot of room and a lot of difference that can be made through reporting things, keeping an eye on archaeological sites, educating people who are buying things, up to writing op-eds or contacting museums to ask, hey, this museum label seems exclusionary or makes me uncomfortable or doesn't seem to account for this or that or whatever. You know, museums are listening these days, hopefully more. And this is the type of feedback that has a direct change, I think. So, for example, time has no meaning. Was it last?
It doesn't, does it?
I don't know. A couple of months ago, I wrote a Twitter thread about a museum having on display a Nepali statue that was stolen in the 1980s with proof that it had been stolen. And the museum took it off display in a few days and said that they're working with the Nepali government for repatriation.
Wow.
Negotiations. So social media can be really powerful because museums and collectors are really in a moment of rethinking what's right. And public pressure is definitely a part of that. That is the sole reason why people look for Nazi looted provenance, but don't seem to care about colonial era takings yet, because there's a lot of public pressure and agreement that one thing is not cool. And there needs to be more public pressure and agreement that other forms of non-ethical taking are non-ethical, and then we'll see real change.
Fantastic. Thank you. So there we go, everybody. Go to eBay, report everything you find, and talk to museums and question their practices if you find them uncomfortable or if you think they should be revised and reviewed. Wonderful. Thank you so much. It's been lovely to chat to you. Everybody, please, if you are on Twitter, go and take a look at Dr. Thompson's Twitter feed, because it's both very informative and highly amusing. The link to her book is also in the description box below. So if you are interested in this topic, definitely take a look at that as well. Thank you again to Dr. Thompson. And until next time, resist poor scholarship. Always ask, how would you know that?
Digital Hammurabi is made possible by generous sponsorship from our patrons. Their support means that we have the technological and academic resources necessary to bring the ancient world directly to you. If you want to join the team, go to patreon.com/digitalhammurabi to see how you can help. Digital Hammurabi is made possible by generous sponsorship from our patrons. Their support means that we have the technological and academic resources necessary to bring the ancient world directly to you. If you want to join the team, go to patreon.com/digitalhammurabi to see how you can help.